We know each other through Kate Thompson, who's an author. She said to ask you about your officer at Dunkirk. Well, I'm not quite sure what she implied there, but I think you saved the life of someone at Dunkirk. Is that right? I think you'd explained something to her before about one of your officers at Dunkirk. Is that right?
Well, she might be mixed up with something. On the groins, the stone groins, we managed to scramble up there to get onto a destroyer. Now, there's a British officer there with a little dog. It's a regimental dog. He's a mascot. And he was trying to get onto the destroyer. And the Royal Navy were in charge. And a Royal Navy officer said, throw the dog in the sea. He's not coming on any of our boats. But the young officer said, it's our regimental officer. I'm going to get it to England. And the Royal Naval officer, a petty officer, I think, he drew his revolver. He said, I'll shoot the dog. Throw it into the sea. And there was an argument. In the end, the soldier officer threw the dog into the sea, and the naval fellow,
Oh.
he shot it. He said, it's not coming aboard, it mustn't come to England. I suppose they were afraid of rabies or anything.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, it must have been so.
They just shot the dog. And the young officer said, I shall have to report you when I get back. The Navy fellow said, you just do that.
Yeah. What was the crossing like? Was you relieved or was it still scary?
The crossing was, the boats were very crowded, of course, and a lot of wounded down in below decks. And it was very smooth going across. We went very full out. I think we must have gone across at 30 knots.
Right.
The destroyer rolling from side to side across. And had to zigzag because of submarines, U-boats, and also aerial.
And was that all happening when you was going across?
Oh, yes. And we zigzagged across to Dover so that we could miss any bombing or U-boats
Yeah.
with torpedoes. We were escorted, of course, with anything, the RAF. They got about bad, but I think they got a bad, bit of a bad name because there weren't many aeroplanes about, but they were inland, keeping the Luftwaffe out of our area. But we managed to get across to Dover. It was a relief.
Was it? Did you feel what was the feeling like when because what had happened over a period of 8 days, I think Winston Churchill said that if we can get 40,000 back, that would be
Yeah.
in brackets successful, but
We got
they got
300.
340,000
Yeah.
back. And it's been referred to as the
It's
miracle of
wonderful.
Dunkirk, and but also referred to as a colossal military disaster by Winston Churchill. He didn't want that to be forgotten. What was the feeling like back in England, back in the UK,
Well,
within the troops and the civilian population?
the civilian population, of course, were pleased to see us. We were greeted because it was regarded as a miracle that so many had got back. I mean, so few of us thought we'd ever get back. But here we were back in England. And we had to find our regiments, what was left of some of them. And I had to go into hospital because I had been injured on the way to on the beaches at Dunkirk, on the in the town. I got wedged between two vehicles, and it took the skin off my back. and it was all stuck to my clothing because we couldn't change any clothing. We had our boots on for about a fortnight.
Yeah.
And when I got to England, the first night we went by train to Aldershot and under canvas. And the next day we went down to Devon, to Okehampton, because Okehampton is an artillery town. And a lot of artillerymen were being pointed in that direction to be sorted out, to find your own regiment. When I got to Okehampton, I reported sick with my back. And they sent me to Manchester, into hospital, from Okehampton in Devon and Dartmoor, right the way up to Manchester. And I spent a couple of nights in the zoo at Bellevue, the famous zoo.
What's the zoo?
But Manchester.
What, a proper zoo, you mean? Do you mean a proper zoo?
Yes, animals? Yes. So lions and tigers in there. Yes. And but because I'd got a medical ticket with me, I found an MO, and they took me into a hospital. They set up a hospital in the old workhouse at Knutsford, the village of Knutsford. And I was in there for about 10 days while they treated my back and plastered it all over. And VAD nurses were doing all the dressings for us and everything. And when I was discharged, I came down to Tatton Park, which is not far from Manchester. And my regiment was under canvas there. And I was only there one night because we marched off the next day and got to trains. We went right down to the Bridport in Devon, Dorset. And we were put onto the beach at the Chesil Bank between Bridport and Lyme Regis, and armed with American rifles and ammunition for the thought to be the invasion. We were put as infantry, all along the Chesil Bank, and right along the south coast, of course, right from Brighton, right the way through, right down to.
So all those 340,000 got put straight back to work, defending the coast.
We were on duty down there. We just had rifles and bayonets, American issue. And we stayed like that until September, until the Battle of Britain was pretty well over. The RAF had sorted all that out with the Luftwaffe. And it was thought that there would be no invasion. So we went inland with our regiment. We went inland and we re-equipped. We got new uniforms. We got new 25-pounder field guns, brand new, and plenty of ammunition. And we got everything ready. And we went to Egypt.
So while Dunkirk was happening...
After
Dunkirk, but... There was the war in North Africa was about to start around the same time.
Yes.
Go on. Well, you went to Egypt.
Well, the Battle of Britain had eased off, and the whole country was on the alert in case there was an invasion. But the Germans did not invade. So we went inland and re-equipped. And got ourselves ready, and we went to Glasgow. We loaded up all our guns and ammunition, everything, on ships, And we got on a troop ship and we sailed for Egypt.
Mm.
We went to Egypt. We went round the Cape of Good Hope because we couldn't go through the Mediterranean for the U-boats scare. The Royal Navy was very busy escorting convoys, so we went right round the Cape. We stopped at Cape Town for about 4 days, had a bit of leave in Cape Town while they revitalised the ship. They took on food and water, and then we sailed on the east side of Africa, up by Madagascar, and we went up through to the mouth of the bottom mouth of the Suez Canal and anchored there and unloaded and went on lighters, barges, into Egypt. We got all our equipment off the boat and more beside, and then we went to a big tented camp in Egypt, not far from Ismailia, not far from Cairo, really. And when we got ourselves right, we set off for the Western Desert.
Mm.
And we went into the desert campaign.
What was the feeling like on the boat on the way around? What was the feeling like with the guys on the boat? Was a
bit crowded.
Was it?
There were 4,000 of us on board.
Yeah. Was the majority of them, had they seen Dunkirk as well? Had they been at Dunkirk?
A lot of them, yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. We had a lot of RAF personnel on board with us, and they were going to join the Desert Air Force. And we went to the Western Desert. We went up to Mirza Matru. But while we were there, getting ourselves sorted out, ready to go into action up further up the desert, there was a crisis in Iraq. There was a mutiny in Iraq, and my brigade out of the division, 151 Brigade, we were rushed off by road up to Iraq to sort out this big rising. The Royal Air Force had a base at a place called Habania, and there was a lake there, and they had one of those seaplanes on there. But it was a Royal Air Force bomber base. But they were cut off by rebels, and we had to go up there to sort the rebels out, which we did. And so the RAF were freed again.
Mm.
And we went back down to the desert.
What did you do? What do you mean you you sorted the rebels out? What did you do?
Well, we went in there with vehicles and armed and arrested them and drove them off.
Mm.
They fled into the desert.
Was he fighting? Did you fight?
No. But, there were no shots fired.
Mm.
If any shots were fired, there were just a few. But the rebels packed in. They were headed by a man called Rashid Ali, who was a Nazi Arab, and he fled. We couldn't. The idea was to try and capture him, but he fled to Berlin.
Mm.
So the Germans looked after him in Berlin. So we didn't have him. But we went back straight back to the desert, and we went up. We bypassed Tobruk. We went through Hellfire Pass, and we didn't go into Tobruk Tobruk was already besieged. They had a 9 months siege there, and that was broken when we were on our way. But
so you started in Egypt. You went up to Libya. Was you in Libya?
Yeah, up into Libya. Yes.
Yeah. So Tobruk was the port, one of the main ports.
Yeah, it was.
You went past Tobruk. That had British, Australian in.
We went about 40 to 50 miles west of Tobruk.
Right.
Gazala, and we dug in there, and we formed from the coast due south a line. And there was the South African 1st Division, the Polish Division, the Guards Brigade, our division, and another North Country Division, and then the Free French. They were right down in the desert at Bir Hakeim. So that we formed the Gazala Line, but we were about 50 miles west of, 40 to 50 miles west of Tobruk. We used to drive into Tobruk to get petrol and to get food. All our supplies came out of Tobruk from the sea.
Even when it was getting besieged?
Part of it was besieged. We used to go at night.
Right.
But in the end, in June 1942, the Germans made an attack. May.
Yeah.
They made an attack on the Gazala line and they encircled it. And we were cut off. The whole line was cut off. They came round and they got up to, the Germans took Tobruk. So in order to get petrol and food and water, especially water, we used to go at night by road on a route in the dark and make up a convoy. And do it. We did it every night.
Oh, really? Did you get attacked then?
Well, not in the night, but if we were late getting out, we got attacked because in the night there would be odd sentries and units would probably pop a few grenades or fire at us, but we got through. One or two vehicles were captured. The Germans knew what we were at, but it was very tricky because there were a lot of minefields up there.
Okay.
But we managed to keep going until the real balloon went up and the Battle of Knightsbridge and all around there and Tobruk fell.
The Rommel was in charge of that area, wasn't he?
Rommel.
Where you guys were, was they fighting on a daily basis?
Oh, yes.
What was it like?
All day.
What is it like to fight in the desert like that?
Hot, fierce. We did a lot of shelling, mortar fire, rifle and bayonets, every day. It quietened down at night. But patrols went out at night, cutting telephone cables and wires and all sorts of dirty tricks, laying mines. but in the end, we were cut off in that Gazala line, and we had to make a break for it. We tried 2 or 3 nights to break out and failed. But one night we just pushed out and we went towards Egypt, Merzimetru, and we reached near Merzimetru from the coast down south, there was a wire, barbed wire fence, a very big one, and we got through that. And we were relatively safe in front of Ellamain. And we tried 4 nights running to get into Ellamain, but we were driven back each time. There were 3 German panzer divisions, the 21st, the 15th, and the 90th. Those 3 panzer divisions blocked the way every night for us.
Were Allied forces dying when this was happening?
Yes.
Was it fighting? Because I don't think we've really emphasised that, because this period of time was particularly fierce. Pretty, on the research I've done.
Pretty fierce.
I want to know, because people are going to be listening to this that was in Afghanistan, was in Iraq, was in the Falklands, Northern Ireland, yes, going back. What was it like to be in contact? What was it like to be getting shelled, to be fixing a bayonet?
Pretty awful. There was shelling and tank shelling, shelling us from tanks. A lot of tank battles and terrible scenes with tanks blowing up and with the men still in. The Germans had brought into the desert an anti-aircraft gun, which they used as a land gun, as field artillery. It's an 88 millimetre, the 88. And it was pretty deadly. Very, very accurate. And it was used for knocking off British tanks and British vehicles. And you had all that going on in the daytime. The German gunners were pretty hot on knocking out tanks and blowing them up and setting fire to them with armour-piercing shells. But 88 millimetre. It's an anti-aircraft gun. Instead of being highly elevated for aircraft, it was brought down as a field gun.
Yeah.
It's very powerful.
How many Allied troops are with you, do you know, at this point, just outside of El Alamein? That's right. Was that where you were?
Yes, just outside Alamein.
Alamein, yeah. So when you was there, how many Allied troops were trying to get into there?
Well, there must have been about four divisions. A lot of Allied troops there, a lot.
20,000, what would the number be? Is it hundreds, or is it thousands, or is it tens of thousands?
I've been just working out. 100,000. Must have been about 100,000.
Really?
But we didn't have the tank. The heavy tanks that we got were rather late in the field. The Grant tank, that was a match for the German Mark III and IV. And then, of course, we came across the Tiger, the German Tiger. But the battle to get back to Alamein was pretty fierce. A lot of casualties.
The friends of yours.
And it was right in the hottest part of the year, June, July, coming up to August. It was very, very hot, and the battle was fierce. No doubt about that.
Did you lose friends at this point? Did you lose friends and comrades at this point?
Yes,
directly.
Yes, I lost some friends, and some were ill with battle fatigue, and the chances of getting them away were very bleak, because we were surrounded. But we managed to get some away at night up round the Tobruk area. Although Tobruk had fallen, we managed to get some away. And I think some were got away by sea.
Mm.
But not in my area. We just had to take them on board on the lorries.
What would battle fatigue be? What would someone who's suffering from battle fatigue,
shaking, nervous, shaking, and not fit for battle, really.
Yeah.
Not at all fit for battle. Nervous breakdown, really. And trembling and shaking, even in that heat.
Yeah.
People were... The odd bod you came across was... He was no good to you. Mm. It was only a case for hospital, but getting them away was terrible. But we did get one or two away in my unit. And I can remember right out in the desert one day, coming across a Royal Air Force patrol, armoured car, a Rolls-Royce armoured car with a RAF, and they took two of our casualties for battle fatigue on board, and they managed to get them back into Egypt.
Mm.
What happened to them, I don't know. It wasn't quite a Dunkirk, but it was not far off that.
Yeah.
You know,
Tobruk itself, they there was Australians there, Indian, Polish, Brits, and 30,000 prisoners of war got taken just from Tobruk itself. What was the next stage of this for you?
Well, down near Alamein, on June the 28th, it was late at night. I was helping an officer. we were leading a convoy of guns. We were going to try and get a battery of 25-pounders into Alamein. And I was a navigator on that night. And we nearly made it. And we went up a ridge and we dismounted and crawled up to have a look over the other side, and we could see the 21st Panzer Division signs on the vehicles. So we crept back to our lot, and we could do... divert in a slightly different direction. And as we moved off, one of the vehicles stalled, and behind it was a 25-pounder gun. And the barrel of the gun poked through the radiator, and the engine pushed the engine back of a vehicle following. And it caused a traffic jam. And the Germans heard it. They knew what we were up to. And they blocked the way. And I had to go forward with my officer on that convoy to see if we could unblock it. And we managed it. We managed to... We hauled that gun out of that lorry and cleared it. And as we went up the ridge, we had a direct hit from a tank and it blew our vehicle up.
Mm.
Three of them on board were killed and I was blown out. And I was on the desert. I'd got hit in the knee with something. I got some ribs broken. That finger was hanging off.
Oof.
And fortunately, the Germans came out of their tanks and they hauled me into their dugout and they hauled me into their dugout and they bound my the MO sewed my finger, that little finger, on and bound my legs up, and he put a big bandage thing right round, one sticky thing around my ribs, and I was alive. Most of my pals were dead, and that German medical officer said to me, "I've done the best." In English, he spoke English. He said, "I've done the best I can for you, Tommy. You do realise now that you are our prisoner of war." So it didn't register really. I was in a bit of pain and a bit grateful that someone had done something in my chest.
Yeah.
And daylight came and they gave me a mug of what, roasted acorns, that coffee. And they put me on a vehicle and they took me to the caves at Bardia, where there were a lot of German wounded and British wounded. And gradually we were taken up the desert as prisoners of war on any old vehicles that were running. And we bypassed Tobruk and we eventually landed up at Benghazi, where they'd made a POW cage just outside the town, the south of the town of Benghazi, out in the open desert. Well, we were told we would be there for 2 or 3 days before we'd been taken to Italy. But we were there 4 months in that filthy camp. It was terrible, honestly. We made the best of it, but there was ill sickness. We were out in the desert, no roof, nothing. We had one blanket each. We huddled under those at night because it's cold in the desert at night. But during the day, we rigged up shelter from the sun with blankets, these odd blankets. And our food for the day, we had a little tin of meat, 50 grams. One tin of that between two men for 24 hours.
Oh, man.
And a hard British ship's biscuit, as hard as concrete. And what we did, we scraped it with a stone into an old tin and put water on it, mixed it up, and ate it like porridge.
Yeah.
It was a terrible ship's biscuit. And the ship's biscuit, and they were full of weevils.
Yeah.
So we had meat and veg.
Some good protein in there.
Yeah, yes. But we lived in under those conditions for 4 months. There was diphtheria, malaria, scarlet fever, rheumatism, all sorts. Every illness you could think of, the diphtheria was the worst because it's so infectious.
Can you describe the camp in like the actual
in that camp
geography of it? Like how were people situated? How was you penned in, or was it just one big?
Oh, we were penned in. It was one big camp, surrounded with a double walk of barbed wire and Italian guards. The Germans handed us over to the Italians there. Yeah. Now, in the camp, there was a big dip at one part, and every evening we met, we made our way before twilight to this dip and sat on the ground, and a British officer, Padre, was captured, living in Benghazi itself, under a guard, and he was brought over every evening by the Italians, and we had a short service every evening with him, but we had no hymns. We sang songs. He said, "It's no good having hymns. We feel as if we're deserted here, so we'll have songs." And one or two of the popular songs at the time that were on the radio, we sang in the place of hymns. But that officer, his name was Captain Wright. He was a South African padre. Now, he used to bring in a bit of news because he'd heard the radio over where he was imprisoned. Mm. With the Italians, the officer's mess, and he used to get a bit of news off the radio, and he'd come out and supposedly preaching to us. The guards didn't know what he was telling. He was telling us a bit of war news.
Yeah.
How they were doing on the Russian front and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
We got it. And it eased our load a bit. It was quite good to see him. We had only one pint of water a day, and it was seawater that had the salt taken out. They had a depot in Benghazi. And the seawater was distilled. And I don't know whether you ever tasted anything like that, but it's very sweet when they take the salt out of the seawater. And it was for the Italian army as well, and the German army. There were a lot of Germans there. And we had all this... desalinated water.
Yeah.
But one pint a day, that's all. And it was in the middle of the summer that year. Temperature about 110, 115. However, after about 4 months there, Montgomery was coming up with his army from Alamein, and we could hear at night, we could hear artillery fire in the distance, like thunder. And we thought, any day now, the British army will be here. But the Germans gave orders to the Italians to move us, and we were taken to Tripoli. Up the coast, a pretty harrowing ride.
Was you in vehicles or was you marched?
We went in lorries and trailers. 50 on the lorry, 50 on the trailer.
Mm.
And we went up to Tripoli and stayed at various spots along the way. And on the first week in December, mind you, we were captured in June. We were still in our desert short trousers and open neck shirts.
Yeah.
We were put on a boat across the Medi to Naples. And when we got to Naples, it was in December, in the middle of winter, pouring with rain. And we were soaked to the skin in our desert outfit.
Mm. Would you say you were starving?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We were skeletons. We went down to, well, one or two of my pals were weighed. And they were fairly well-built people. And I reckon I was the same size as them. And but they were weighed because they had possibly diphtheria coming on. And they were under 6 stone.
Oh.
So I reckon I dropped down to about 6 stone. And I was 11.
Yeah. In 4 months.
I lost about 5 stone on that Benghazi run up the desert.
How long was the boat journey across? How long was the journey across from Africa to...
2.5 days. A terribly rough sea. And we were in the dark hold of the ship down the bottom.
Yeah.
There's no toilet down there. And we were in the dark. The lid was on top of the hold. And on one occasion... there was an occasion each day when they lifted one corner of the lid and an Italian officer on the boat came and shouted down at us in English that he said, "We're halfway across the Mediterranean. We have been picked up by a British submarine, but I will not... sink the boat." He said, I will hand it over if the submarine surfaces and holds us up by gun, with its gun, I will hand over the ship and you to the British. I will not sink the ship, pull the plug." So we gave him 3 hearty cheers for that. And they put the lid back on again.
Mm. Did you get